All right, before we get into today's podcast, it's actually sponsored. My first sponsor. I don't even know. I'm not even brand friendly. I don't even get sponsors. So huge shout out to BlockFi. Just go to BlockFi.com/Bryce to get started today. So Pomp, I'm actually interested in buying Bitcoin in the future. Tell them a little bit about our sponsor for today.
Guys, today's sponsor is BlockFi. Go check them out. You can go to BlockFi.com/Bryce, BlockFi.com/Bryce. You can buy Bitcoin. You can earn up to 8.6% interest in their interest-bearing account. I'm an investor in the company. I sit on the board of directors. They're awesome. I keep a bunch of crypto there. Go check out BlockFi.com/Bryce, and let's get into this episode.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. We have a very, very, very special guest today. Honestly, a fucking goat. Pomp, you want to explain who we got?
Guys, we got Mark Cuban coming on the podcast today. Mark is a billionaire. He's sold multiple companies for literally billions of dollars. He owns the Dallas Mavericks. You've probably seen him on ABC's Shark Tank. And he is going to not only tell us how he built his wealth, but also he's going to give some great advice to Bryce. We really hope you guys enjoy this one. All right, Mark, thanks so much for doing this. I know Bryce is super excited to kind of learn from you and get some mentorship here. Maybe before we get that started, tell him and kind of all of his listeners just how you built your wealth. And they probably know you from Shark Tank, but just kind of what was your story and how you built wealth?
I've been an entrepreneur since I've been a kid, man. I was buying and selling baseball cards before it was cool. I sold garbage bags door to door. I started a company buying and selling stamps that helped me pay for college. I paid for my junior year of college through a chain letter. I opened up a bar before I was 21. It was the hottest bar on campus at Indiana University. Then I got busted because I let my friends in. And then I went down to Dallas, didn't have anything. By that time I was broke, living six guys in a three bedroom apartment, got a job working at night as a bartender. During the day, I got a job selling software, and that's where I got into the tech business. About 9 months in, I was teaching myself how to program, and then I got fired. And so I was like, look, I'm a shitty employee. So I'm just going to start my own company. So I started a company called Micro Solutions. And what we did way back in the day was help people figure out how to use a PC and help them use it in their businesses. And I taught myself more and more and more about tech, taught myself how to program in BASIC and DBASE, all these database languages, some C. And built that up into a $30 million company and sold it right before I turned 30 for about $6 million after taxes and after giving a bunch to my employees. I ended up with $2.5 million. Took that money, bought a lifetime pass on American Airlines, partied like a rock star, just went everywhere. My whole mission in life was just to get as messed up with as many different new friends as I could find everywhere in the world. And I was really, really good at it. But along the way, I put my money with a guy at Goldman Sachs, a young kid about my age, and he was always having this Goldman Sachs analyst ask me about these tech stocks because we were one of the biggest, by the time I sold it, we were one of the biggest systems integrators in the country. We're easily top 10 in size. And so they were asking me all these questions and the answers I gave them would move stocks. And I was like, well, if it's like the prices are changing and I really wasn't into the market, I didn't know a lot about it at that time. He was like, you really should be like doing these things since you know more about these companies than our analysts do. So I started buying and selling stocks. This is like a year after I sold my company and was crushing it. I was making 80, 90, 100% a year and took that money. And they took my performance and we started a hedge fund. But the hedge fund really didn't get off the ground because someone bought it from me for decent money within 9 months. And so it was great. So took that, again, still partying like a rock star because I was trading stocks from anywhere in the world. It was awesome. And then went back to Dallas for a girl. That didn't work out. And then was hanging out with one of my guys from Indiana, Todd Wagner. And he was like, you know, there's got to be a way that we can listen to Indiana basketball. This is 1995, showing you how old I am. 1995, it's like, we got to be able to listen to Indiana basketball using this new thing called the internet. I'm like, that's cool. I'm into the networking, right? That's what my company did. You know, we did networking and software. So let me figure this out. And that was the start of a company called AudioNet, which was the very first streaming company on the internet. And so we really started the whole streaming industry, starting with audio. And then by 1998, we were into video, changed the name to broadcast.com, went public, and it was the biggest IPO in the history of the stock market then. Just like now you're seeing some of these companies go crazy. We were dominating. We were YouTube before YouTube. We just dominated everything in streaming. Everything that was done first on the internet in terms of streaming, whether it's football, basketball, bowling, bar mitzvahs, weddings, we streamed it first. And then we sold it to Yahoo for in 2000 for $5.7 billion in stock. Now, the interesting part about that, obviously, I was a happy camper. That made me a shitload of money. The interesting part about it, that was right when the internet bubble was getting ready to burst. Everybody else was like, no, this isn't going to change. It's going to keep on going straight up. I was like, I got all the money I need. So I worked with that same broker and we did what was called a caller. So I sold calls on the Yahoo stock I got because I didn't get cash. I got stock and I sold calls on it and bought puts. And within 9 months after doing that, the whole internet stock market crashed. And I ended, because of crash and I bought those puts, I ended up making more money off of it. And it was called one of the top 10 trades in Wall Street history. So, and then right around the same time, I was buying the Mavs, and that's how I made all my cash.
So you consider yourself definitely one of the luckiest men alive.
Oh, I'm the luckiest motherfucker on the planet.
The timing of everything that you did was just perfect.
Yeah, but you remember, I mean, yeah, for sure. But I had to be able to figure out how to do it. And so like right after that, I started the first all high definition TV network when nobody thought high definition was ever going to happen. You know, they looked at that and said, you know, why would anybody need one of those? You know, just started, you know, now you see movies that are premiering on VOD, and we were doing that back in 2006. So that's kind of been my gig, trying to stay one step ahead of technology and trying to turn it into a company. And then as it's turned out, like you said, the timing was good.
So obviously you started this at a very young age. I did as well, but not in the stock space. I started social media when I was 14 years old. I'm 21 years old now. What advice would you give me for investing? Because I just got to investing like 2 months ago, 3 months ago. I've been making pretty good money for the average 21 year old. I'm doing over $1 million a quarter on, cool, on my apparel line. I'm wearing it out actually right now. It's the Party Animal University. I represent the party demographic. So,
you know what? I used to represent the party demographic too.
Yeah, I know. And that's when you said you partied hard, I laugh. Cause that is, I can only imagine.
You can't, but but in any event, you know, my the wisdom I try to give you, my advice to you is that, first realize when stocks are going straight up, everybody's a genius in a bull market. And so it's hard to not get overconfident thinking you're really smart at what you're doing, because it seems like every stock you buy, it's going straight up and you're making money and you're just trying to time it out so you don't lose your money. And so everybody gets overconfident. And so the great stock pickers aren't only the ones who make money when things are going up. They make money all the time because they know what they're doing, because two, they know what they're investing in. Always remember, nobody's selling you a stock because they think it's going to go down. Mm-hmm. Right. So if whatever share of stock you're buying Google, you're buying Facebook, you're buying Hertz Rent-A-Car in bankruptcy because Portnoy, you know, and those guys all are talking it up. You know, why did somebody sell it to you? And ask yourself that, because there's always a reason, because if you don't have an edge and why you're buying it, then it's just going to be a matter of time before you give all that money back. And three, you got to learn. You got to learn this shit about the companies, yeah, because otherwise anybody can pull the wool over your eyes. Anybody can talk shit and you'll never know if it's real or not.
So a slight advantage that I have 30 million followers across all platforms added up together. The advantage is I have these followers. I can push out this product or this company to my audience.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So if you're pushing product, right, and you're out there selling your gear, great. If you're pushing stocks, there's a whole different set of laws involved there. The SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, is not your friend. And so it's one, you've got to be really careful. It's okay to get long and get loud. That's what they call it, right? Where, okay, I own Google shares or I own Amazon shares, And I'm going to tell everybody I own Amazon shares. But the one thing you cannot do is if you buy a share of stock and you of a company and you talk it up because you want to get that stock up so you can get out of it. Oh, you go straight to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200 million. So if you are if you're telling people, okay, everybody, I'm in on Amazon or I'm in on, you know, whatever. And then you use it and you say, okay, I pushed it up to this level and people are buying it. And you said, oh, that's high enough. I'm getting out. That's called a pump and dump. And you got to be really, really, really careful. It's one thing to have a voice, you know, stocks are a lot like baseball cards if they don't play dividends, right? Whatever, you know, if you got a Luka Doncic, you know, basketball card, if you got a Luka Doncic rookie card and that price is going up and you know, it's worth what somebody will pay for it, you know, but if you're up there pushing it and you sell because you pushed it high enough that you think it's too high, you got to be really, really careful and make sure you know exactly what you're doing because they will come and get your ass and throw you in jail.
So I have 15 million followers about on TikTok and I think
you want to see my renegade.
That's what your daughter's on TikTok, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. She met some of my roommates at Playlist.
It's I was there.
The social media. Oh, you were there.
Oh, I was at Playlist. Hell yeah, I was there.
Hell yeah. So what do you think?
Want to see me dance in my $1,000 pants?
Yeah. What do you think about TikTok?
No, I love it, man. I mean, it's fun. You know, from a technology perspective, they did it right. So think about what TikTok has done. They spent hundreds of millions of dollars. TikTok was not a viral sensation. It wasn't like people TikTok is just such an amazing app that everybody just went to it. Like when Snapchat first came out, people just downloaded it. When Facebook first came out, people just downloaded it. It was very viral. TikTok and the Chinese ByteDance, they spent hundreds of millions of dollars in order to get people to use it. So it's a little bit of a different life story or history than most other apps. But what they do that's better than any other app, and it's not even close, is their artificial intelligence. So like I'm an AI geek, I'm a tech geek, right? And so on Instagram and Facebook, like if you, whoever you follow, that influences what they show you. The topics that you like, that influences what they show you. But even on Instagram, like it doesn't really watch the videos or pictures and say, how many times have you looked at it? Whereas on TikTok, like they want, you know, the way TikTok's designed with the 15 and 30s and 60s, people will watch it multiple times. And so they don't care. TikTok doesn't care who you follow, right? The follows are just there for DMs and stuff like that. And it helps you a lot, right? Because you can get things out to them. But the reality is TikTok pays more attention to what you actually watch and feeds you stuff. So even though you might have 15 million followers, you know that sometimes you may not get a whole lot of likes on it, right? Or you don't get a lot of comments, even though you think your 15 million followers have seen it all. Chances are they haven't.
I think it's super unique that TikTok gives anyone the ability to blow up on it or get these high numbers.
Like that.
Yeah, just like that, overnight almost. Even like in a year, like the biggest TikTok star is Charli D'Amelio. She gained over 60 million followers on TikTok alone just this year. That actually leads me into my next question. What do you think about TikTokers doing angel investing?
So there's two things, right? Look, you've got this you're an entrepreneur, right? And so you know what works for your clothing line, your brand line. There's no worse business than clothing other than music. It's the absolute worst. Like you've seen how many people come out with their own clothing line. They come out with some cool saying, right? And you know, it's like with the soft guys, right? That, you know, I'm softy or whatever it was. And like they come up with their angle and they think that, you know, they've got it down. But it's got to be something that not only is good, but that you know that your audience wants. And you've got to always reiterate, right? Because what you started with is probably a lot different than where you are now because you see what works and what doesn't work, right? You know, and so that's the thing about angel investing and being an entrepreneur. You've got to find something that you have an angle for, you have an edge in. Like having 15 million TikTok followers is awesome, right? And so, but if you have shitty clothes and it doesn't connect, it doesn't matter. You're not going to sell $1 million a quarter because there's people across social media that have bigger followings than you that aren't able to sell. And so not only have you got to be able to, let me put that a different way, having that base of followers is awesome, right? But you still have to know what you're doing, and you still have to have to be a smart entrepreneur and know how to sell and what sells and what doesn't work and learn from your mistakes, you know? And so, you know, I'm sure you've been through that already. Now from there, in terms of angel investing, a lot of people with big social media, like I've got, how many followers do I have? I think in total 17, 18 million followers, right? And so my audience is split up a lot, right? So I've got sports, I've got business, and I've got, you know, politics or random whatever stuff, right? So I don't have this, I don't have a monolithic set of followers, so I can't just sell one thing or another. So there's certain things that work, so certain things that don't. Like people who follow me for Shark Tank stuff, I know exactly what I can sell them. And you learn the same way, what works and what doesn't work. And when you're angel investing, you got to pick those same things that work, right? You've got to know that this is who my audience is. And these are the, if I'm going to go angel invest and I want to be the person that amps it up, then that's what you have to look for, right? Because if you're just trying to say, you know what, I like this company, and that's cool. There's nothing wrong with being a silent angel investor, but you know, for you, I'd recommend really sticking to the things that you can have an impact on and things that you can help blow up. And when you do that, rather than just giving them, you know, X number of dollars, you should be asking for equity, right? For advisory shares, because that's what I do, right? That's where,
yes,
when you hear these stories about athletes or anybody in big social media followings really killing it, it's because they got equity, because what you're contributing isn't just cash in terms of being an angel investor, it's your platform. And, you know, there's times when people are like, you know, can, you know, are you going to tweet this? Are you going to put this on LinkedIn? Are you going to put it on Instagram or whatever? I'm like, it's going to cost you, right? If I'm investing $250,000 in you for X percent of the company, you get your $250,000, and I'm happy to help you and answer questions, but, you know, you have to protect your platform, as you know.
Yeah. So that's what me, Griffin and Josh are doing. We're getting advisory shares. So a lot of these TikTokers or even social media people in general, they make pretty good money. If you're at the, like the level that I'm at, like, let's say, lowest 2 mil, highest 10 mil, 15 mil a year. Mm-hmm. How much would you suggest goes into investing if you make $15 million liquid, $15 million in your account?
So it depends what your long-term plans are, because you're young, right? And so, because who knows? I mean, TikTok is shut down tomorrow. And the thing about it is, you know, not everything translates. And just like, you know, I don't know what your following is on Instagram, and I don't know how many you have on Snapchat, right? But it's not as many as you have on TikTok. And so you've got this risk factor that goes in, because, you know, just look at all the people that were big in the early days of the internet, big on YouTube, big on Twitch, big on, you know, Instagram, big on Snapchat, right? They're not all the same people, and they don't always translate into what's next. And there's always something next. So on one hand, you have to ask yourself personally, you know, what do I need for safety factor? What if this goes away? Because that's a reality. Now, having your own company, that's great. But you can't always assume that you're going to have the same type of platform to drive things. And so with that in mind, you know, you want to have $1 million or $2 million just in case, you know, just to live off of if it goes to the shitter, right? And then you want to have that growth investment capital where you want it to be safe. So you want to take, you know, 25% of and put into a low cost SPX, Standard & Poor's 500 mutual fund, and just put it away. You're not allowed to look at it for 40 years. That's your retirement, right? And so when you're retiring at 60, whatever, that money's been growing, and hopefully everything's gone decently and that money is 10X, right? And then you have your angel investments and you want to take 25% of that there. But what I tell you is that will you make money off your angel investments? That's okay to put that into more angel investment stuff. Stick with what you're good at. Like, I'm good at tech. I'm really fucking good at tech, right? I can invest in technology companies and help them and build them and support them in different ways. And so I'm really confident in doing that. Someone asked me to invest in biotech today. I don't know biotech, right? There's not a whole lot of value that I could add. Clothing companies, I know I look good, right? But I just don't have that platform just to build out and sell shit. And so you know, you've got where you really have an edge. You want to take that 25%, maybe even as much as 50%, right? And just keep on, you know, when if you go to Vegas and you're playing blackjack and you keep on getting 11s, you always double down, right? And so that's what you got to do. You got to double down where you're good. And that's how fortunes are made. Because if you keep on learning, you know, it's really easy to get caught up and say, okay, I got this platform. This is my gravy train. Let me just be Bryce, right? I know people like me, you know, they like what I do online, but that's not going to pay your bills when you're 45, right? And so, and who knows what's going on. And so you want to be in a position where you're learning, because if you're 21 now, how much can you learn over the next 20 years? How much can you learn over the next 25 years that makes you super fucking smart about something? So when someone says the clothing industry, Bryce Hall, right? Or whatever it is that you're getting into, consumer products, Bryce Hall. Well, that's that old TikTok guy. Remember when TikTok was big 20 years ago? Yeah, but that dude learned everything about this business. He knows everything about this industry. And so he said, and that's the guy you want to bring in as an investor, because he knows everything about it.
So the smarter kids on social media, very few of them, by the way, but they build products and they eventually want to flip the product and sell it later down the road. Yep. Josh and I, do you know Josh Richards?
No.
I think he met your daughter at Playlist, and I think he met you, but it's my
what's this guy's name?
Josh Richards. He's another TikTok
kid.
Yeah. We started an energy drink, and it's called Annie, short for animal. So
right.
Unleash the beast. We're animal energy.
Unleash the beast. Okay. I saw that.
It all started because we used to shotgun Red Bulls in our videos, because we weren't 21. We couldn't do beer. We couldn't do anything.
I hear you.
We couldn't put it out to the audience, obviously. But we just developed and got our first sample of Annie energy, and we've been building it. It's from, I think a month ago is when we actually got the physical product. When we actually got it in stores. We want to eventually like sell that. And I'm very confident.
Well, let me ask you a question. So I get, because you're using it and you want to sell it, you build it up to a certain amount of volume, right? Then all the energy drink companies are looking for a way to line up products that already have a base. That makes sense. But why go where everybody else is? That's the challenge, right? Because now you've got to be a superstar, because there are so many energy drinks. So it's not that you can't crush it. And yeah, you know, the right approach is to try to build it big enough that someone does want to buy you, because it's a really tough industry. But look for those things where people ain't, right? Making products that are, you know, that create trends or new categories, because that, you know, when you create a new industry, when you create a new category, you know, when Red Bull came out with Red Bull, there were no energy drinks, you know, and then there were one or two knockoffs, and that's why Red Bull is Red Bull. And so I get that you can build an energy drink that's geared towards, you know, the 20-something TikTok audience that wants to be amped, that's doing dances, that wants that energy, and you represent that, right? But it's just, it's going to be harder for you to get there because everybody and their brother is competing with you. Again, not saying you can't, but yeah, it's just going to be hard.
That makes complete sense. Pomp, what did you want to add?
Yeah, Mark, I think one of the big things for Bryce is we've been talking a bunch about kind of the investment of his time and capital, right? In terms of, should he actually be investing time and capital into the businesses he's building versus angel investing and that type of stuff? Maybe talk through a little bit. You're an entrepreneur. Yeah, you're an entrepreneur and you're an investor, right? And so how do you kind of think about splitting your time between those two things? And especially for him as a younger guy, kind of how would you think about it at 21, where, you know, really opportunity is not scarce, it's your time and your money that's scarce.
Yeah, I look for leverage, right? So if I'm investing in a product, does it help any of my existing companies? And so I'm an investor in 200 plus companies, you know? And so when it comes to new opportunities, even when I was just starting, it was like, okay, Micro Solutions, my first company, if I'm going to make an investment, how does it help Micro Solutions? Because that's really my gravy train. And how much time is it going to take? Because the one thing you can't do is mess up your gravy train. If it takes any time away from you doing your core business, your core competency, then it's a mistake and you can't do it. And you can't get caught up, because Bryce, one of the things you'll find out is that you're going to reach roadblocks and hurdles that you have to overcome or problems you have to overcome as you grow these companies. Like, how long have you had your brand, the clothing company?
Since June. May.
Okay, so you're talking five months, right? And that 5 months, everything's gravy right now. It's rolling, right? Because you're hot and everything. You haven't had a situation. You probably had some SKUs that you thought would sell that didn't sell, right? And they're sitting there in inventory, but you know, you're not too worried about it because you keep on selling other stuff and you're bringing in $1 million a quarter or $1 million a month, whatever it is, and it's going to the bottom line. But you're going to make a mistake somewhere along the line, or somebody's going to compete, or somebody's going to be a little bit hotter, and that's going to be a challenge. So you've got, when you're looking at angel investing, you've got to make sure that when that hurdle hits, you're ready to deal with it. And there's nothing that's distracting you from focusing on your moneymaker, right? Now, if you can just walk away from it, made your money, that's all fine and good. That's good. But so point being, and to answer Pomp's question, when you're investing as an angel investor now, look at things that really play to your strengths that don't take away from your time or distract you. Because remember, if particularly when you make smaller investments, $5,000, $10,000, $25,000, if people are taking a $25,000 investment, one, it means they're taking a lot of investors, right? And that is its own set of issues, right? Because you have to ask yourself, why couldn't they get one big investor or two or three or five big investors? Or two, what are they really expecting from you as an investor? Do they want more of your time? Do they want more of your platform? What is it that makes it okay for them to accept a $10,000 investment? Because when I look at a deal and I see 20 people investing $10,000, it tells me there's not a lot of smart money there. Or they really want all those people to commit in time somehow, some way. So I'm not saying you're not smart money, but what I'm saying is because you're just dipping your toe in the water, you also have to look for the red flags. Number one red flag is make sure it doesn't suck time away or energy away from your moneymaker. Number two red flags, why are they asking you? Like, if people ask me to invest, I'm like, why do you want me to invest in this? You know, seriously, you know, is it just the money or is there something else that you're looking for? Because I don't want to be stuck, you know, having to do something that because there's some miscommunications. And three, what's the liquidity? You know, a lot of time people come and say, well, you know, we're building this product and we're going to resell it. And look what George Clooney did. Look what so-and-so did with this liquor, with this drink. Look what happened to vitamin water, you know, and how well they did, or this coconut water, right? But you can't really start a company purely for an exit. You've got to be able to operate it. And so I always want to know what the plan of the person I'm investing is, because if their mission was to sell within 3 years and they aren't able to, they're going to quit on the company and your money's gone, right? And when that happens, it's not just your money, it's also your brand. Oh yeah, you remember that company Bryce invested in that died? Yeah, okay, what about the next one and the next one? And then you invest in enough duds, you're Donald Trump.
Anyways, no, I'm kidding. Pomp, what else?
I think that's it. Any other questions you got?
You guys are being easy on me. Come
I kind of no. I kind of want to know a little bit about like one of your craziest spending parties.
Oh my Lord! No, you don't.
Got to do.
Yeah, my daughter's going to hear this. So I bought that lifetime pass on American Airlines.
Yeah.
Well, now that wasn't as much crazy spending. So we used to do this thing where we'd walk into a club, and this was after I sold my company, and we just buy bottles of Cristal for everybody. Yeah. And so we would just have them all lined up, or we would throw these parties. So I left out one part. So when I came to Dallas, I also, because I had the bar, I knew how to throw parties and get people there, right, and just tear it up. And so we would throw these parties where we'd rent out these big warehouses. And there's this whole part of Dallas called Deep Ellum that started from the parties we would throw. And now it became kind of a party destination. And so we'd rent out these big warehouses and we charged $20. We'd go all around and half the fun was promoting it. And we'd have these white business cards that had the date, the time, and location. We give thousands of white business cards out to women. And then we'd have like 100 blue cards that we only gave out to dudes. And it was $20 for everybody to get in. But a good, and we'd get 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people to all these huge parties. But that wasn't the best part. The best part was every girl that came in got a full bottle of champagne. Every guy that came in got a red Solo cup just to drink from the kegs of beer. And the parties were just outrageous. And we would just crush it, crush it.
Yeah, no, I watched a video a few days ago where it kind of explained your first purchase, the bar in your hometown. You got a loan to buy it?
No. So what happened was it was at Indiana University where I went to school. It was before my senior year. And so I took my student aid. So I had $2,500 in a student loan. And then one of my buddies put up some money too, Evan Williams. And that's how we started the bar. And yeah, the chain letter was before. Yeah. So that was how we started it. So the $2,500 is my student loan.
Yeah, no, I saw that. I actually was looking into getting a bar. Obviously with COVID going on, you can't do anything, but I'm known as like the party animal in my space. And I wanted to eventually get one. Cause I saw you do that.
I'm telling you, I wouldn't do a bar right now. If I was getting, cause bars, you got a baby, forget, even if it wasn't COVID, the worst part about running a bar was all the babysitting. Just had to babysit. And I'm an investor in a couple of bars. I'm also an investor in this alcohol called a brown sugar bourbon, which is kind of like a higher end Goldschlagers. And it's just like, it's smooth, tastes really good. You got an 80 proof and 103 proof. Not that I'm pitching it here or anything, but it's really, really, really good. But if I was getting going again, I'd go back to what we did when I first came to Dallas and Deep Ellum. And I would just set up these huge warehouse gigs, right? Because there's so many big open warehouses available. And I would just do them one-off big party promotions. Raves need to come back, right? Raves were always outside and, you know, had their own angle. But, you know, DJs, you know, TikToks, I mean, all that stuff that you can get set up and just geared towards your brand. And you can make it kind of like your own Coachella. Whereas with the bar, you got to babysit that shit every single day. And you get your regular drunks that come in here. You get the dudes that always want to fight. You get everybody, you know, that's just, they're just thinking it's their good time and making it a mess. Whereas you got the marketing chops and you got the sales chops. You know, imagine setting up a deal where, you know, you put together a 50,000 foot warehouse, right? And you bring in a DJ and you charge people to get in. And then you also had vendors, you had your clothing line, you had other clothing line, you had different music acts, you had people selling all this stuff. Then that's fun and you get to tear it up and be a beast, but it's also protectable and it's also, you know, something that you can control at a certain level. Because just day to day of a bar is a grind.
Yeah. So let's say you're put yourselves in my shoes. I'm a 21-year-old with 30 million followers across all platforms. I'm starting a few businesses. I'm investing. What would you do? Would you build a product? Would you invest more money? If you were,
I look for angles. I always look for places people aren't. That's where I've made my money. You know, streaming before streaming, HD before HD, you know, multi-platform movies before everybody else was doing it. So I try to find things where I can introduce them that people, to me, like the ultimate deal is something that makes people say, why didn't I think of that? Mm-hmm. You know, where it's like, oh shit, that makes perfect sense. I want one, you know? And so those are the things I look for, whether I come up with them or people bring them to me and I can juice them. Right. And that's what I'd recommend you doing. You know, you're doing the blocking and tackling with the branding and the clothing line, and that's smart, right? That's money in the bank, and you're super smart to do that. But what you want to do is find those angles that where people aren't, where things that you see, right? Because with 15 million followers just on TikTok, right, you know what people are DMing you about, what people are commenting about, what people are asking about. And if you see something in your work, in your realm of things that we say, you know what? People aren't going to see this coming. Now, I would also do it initially on a limited basis, right? Where you have drops on things that are exclusive to you. And so that's number one, because you can experiment. And if you only sell 100, you're good, right? Because it was limited edition. If you sell 1,000, you're good. But then you can see what really sells and amp your way up. So doing things that are drop driven, I think is how would I approach anything. And then I'd say the other thing, what the fuck was the name of that place? Remember HQ Trivia?
HQ Trivia. No, I'm not familiar.
Okay. You got Pop. You remember what it is?
Oh, I remember. We really may be too old for this already, right?
Yeah, that was only 2 years ago, right?
Yeah. HQ Trivia was basically like a app. Same time every night, they would do live, like almost like Jeopardy style, but anyone could play from anywhere in the world on the mobile app.
Yeah, and people would play to win money, right? So getting people, they were able to get over 1 million people at one time doing this one thing. And maybe you know this, Bryce. What's the largest TikTok live audience?
Like how many consistent viewers I had at one time?
Yeah, at one time.
Over 100,000.
Okay, that's okay. But imagine if you can get 1 million.
Yeah.
What's that worth?
A lot of money.
Yeah. That's what I would try to gear towards as well, right? Being the, because if you can build a live audience for something that's entertaining, that may be translatable to YouTube and that to Twitch or whatever. So now it's, you know, because TikTok is hard. Right. Being a consistent, I mean, well, let me ask you, Bryce, is being a consistent content provider on TikTok hard?
I think being a consistent provider on TikTok, no.
No,
because
you can do it's only 15 seconds or
there are 15 second videos that you see on your For You page. You recreate it. There's no creative direction with TikTok. It's just dances and then maybe comedy sketches, but those don't perform well across other platforms. With TikTok dances and the things that I do on it, nothing creative goes behind it. That's where YouTube comes into the factor. That's where I put my long form personality really on. TikTok, as long as you're being consistent, posting multiple videos a day, I cannot see if you do it for.
So that's how you stay on the days. FYP. That's how you stay on people's pages, and that's how you get the likes, and that's how you get people at least seeing your stuff.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So then I would tell you to try to get them all at one place, but
Mark, one of the other things, he's been very smart. He's got about just under 3 million YouTube subscribers, and he's spent and they post, I think, one or two videos per week that are kind of, you know, 10 minutes, give or take, that are high action packed. People really watch the whole thing.
Cool.
You know, 2 million views, et cetera. So similar to what you're talking about, it's not all live, but it's 1 million, 2 million views all in one spot, you know, on a video.
Okay. Well, that helps. Okay. So then how many email addresses do you have?
Three.
Three? No, no, not you personally, of all your fans.
Oh, like how many do you think they have?
Do you have an email mailing list at all of your fans, your followers?
I think there's a direct link on my merch site. Besides that, I don't get any of their emails.
Okay. So you don't have like anything you can put out via email?
If you sign up for my merch, yes, you get like an email.
But that's it. So a couple thousand people, maybe 10,000 people.
Yeah, there's over 100. There's probably over 100.
Okay, so that's what I would build, right? Because that's transportable, first of all, if something happens to the platform. Two, you can go to them instead of them having to come to you in terms of marketing and merchandise. Three, you get a chance not only to send video, but you get a chance to educate and you get a chance to connect more. Four, you can also ask things, right? Ask questions and really process them and have people come back to you. And so it makes it a little bit easier to test things out. So that would be the next thing that I would do then, because you don't really, right now, you don't own your customer. You do to a certain extent with your merchandising, right? People who have bought from you and you have credit card information and stuff to that. But the other 14 million, you know, or actually 29 million, you might have them as subscribers, you know, followers, but you don't really have control of them in any way, shape or form. And that, and, there's also a thing called community on iOS, on iPhone. Are you familiar with that? Okay, you have it.
I have over 100,000 signups.
Okay, so that's good too. So you get at least a chance to text people, right? And work there. Now it's not super dynamic, but at least it's something. Yeah. But I would start building up users' email addresses or information that you can own that's transportable with you and allows you to cross-pollinate. So you can email them and say, you know what, I'm dropping my next TikTok or I'm dropping my next YouTube video. Or subscribe to me, or it makes it easier to set up a VIP club. So if you want to get the first merchandise club, you know, I think there's also a business to be had for $1 a month type opportunities. Now, I don't know.
Yeah,
the
subscription.
Just first access, just like a baby VIP club. Because when you say subscriptions, people think, what am I getting per month? Right. Mm-hmm. But if you're able to say for a buck a month, right? Presuming that your followers, enough of them have credit cards or access to credit cards, right? If you're able to say a buck a month, you get my first drops for all my merch, right? You get all the advanced information on my TikToks. And when I do appearances, you get first crack, because the nature of TikTok and YouTube doesn't lead to that, right? You can say, hey, you know, on a YouTube, you can drop a 15 second say, hey, I'm going to be here, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, YouTube doesn't, TikTok doesn't help you in those circumstances, because that doesn't fill their algorithm, right? It doesn't really fall within place of your algorithm. So imagine if you were able to get 5 million followers, 5 million email addresses. That's power. That is money in the bank. Now that 5 million, if you were able to get a million of them giving you a buck a month.
I mean, yeah.
That's I want my cut, my advisory shares. But you see what I'm saying, right? There's a difference between the platform owning the user and you owning the user. Mm-hmm. And when you own the user, you can sell anything.
That's really good advice. I appreciate that. Seriously. I'm taking you up on that. Definitely doing that. That's coming down. Thank you so much, Mark, the goat himself. BBC Billionaire Boys Club. Thank you so much for coming in today, dude. Seriously, appreciate it.
My pleasure, Bryce. Bob, thanks for having me on. Shark Tank, October 16th, Friday nights on ABC. Check it out. Enjoy, guys. Thanks for having me on, Bryce. Thanks, Bob. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Mark.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it, man.